Welcome, college baseball fans, to episode 54 of the 11.7 podcast brought to you by College Baseball Hub. James, it is time for Omaha, and we are ready to go. Everything you guys need to know in this one episode. You ready, James?
Let's get
James, we finally made it. Well, kind of. You can see the finish line of the season, and it is the best part of the season. Only 8 teams remain, and I think it's no better time than for us to just do what we talked about before the show and explain to the fans how what we've done is a metaphor to where we are at in the college baseball season.
First of all, welcome, welcome, welcome. The time has come. We are ready for the glorious bout of nearly 2 weeks of baseball in Omaha. We are your home for the realest of real coverage, wall to wall. It's going to be great. But Ben, you're exactly right. And I think a great example of it is this is podcast number
54.
It's in the same ballpark, 54, in the same ballpark, pun intended, of how many games these teams have played this year. You know, it was a long season for them. And it's been the metaphor, a long season for us. And, you know, we're holding it together. Like, there are going to be guys that take the field this week that are not 100%. The wear and tear on their bodies. Like, you know, they got jammed thumbs, like aches and bruises. And you
know, I'm going to take a step further. There's not one guy that's going to take the field that's 100% healthy.
Amen.
Zero. I played in like 29 games my senior year, and I wasn't 100%.
Bro, I couldn't make it through the fall of my junior year. What, we did practice every day and play three? Like
these guys, the bottom line is these guys are hurting. And the only thing that gets them through is the adrenaline and the energy that they have built up inside of them and the excitement. And besides that, they get off the field and they are covered in ice. Ice baths, everything.
100%. Question. When do you think how long before do you think these teams get to Omaha? Like, you know, the first game Saturday, I would have to imagine by Thursday, everyone's there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they're all there tonight, aren't they? Isn't there tomorrow there's going to be an MLB game? Like the Tigers and Royals are playing a game on the field, and God, I think all the players get to go and watch that.
That's going to be really funny when the combined talent is going to be better than that. Just kidding. But
dude, no, honestly, if you put together, and this is a wild stretch, but very subjective here. Don't quote me, but if you put together the 10 best, let's just say the 25 best players out of the 8 teams combined, and you played against the Tigers and Royals in a 7-game series, I'm not saying that they win the 7-game series, but it's pretty dang close. If you give them metal bats and, I don't know, home team.
Make an all-star team out of it. It would definitely be entertaining. But I'm so fired up because it has been a long, long year. And the kids are ready, man. They've been – this is what they go through everything for, these stupid fall compliance meetings, like these freaking lectures they have to get from the academic advising staff, like don't cheat in class, like all this stuff the kids have gone through, and they're finally going to play in front of the brightest lights of the year, the most meaningful games these kids will play until they, you know, almost, this is going to be the highlight of everyone's baseball career. Like for almost everyone that's not going to go on and, you know, reach free agency status in the major leagues. Like there will be less than a handful of players that will get over 6 years of MLB service time from Omaha here. So these kids are, I'm just so excited for them to just go out and have a good time, showcase their talent, showcase our sport, right? Showcase this sport that we say is the best.
We are all in this together here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Us and the fans listening and the players all around the country, this is our time to shine. This is the one weekend of the year where college baseball gets put on SportsCenter, gets put on the front page of ESPN.com. And if it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, are you not entertained? Because this is the time that the best teams are playing, the most, every pitch matters, and you get it for 11 days straight. So
it's going to be wild.
It's going to be fun. Only first, wait, hold on, James. I got to cut you off. I just want to let the fans know that you were questionable today, and we thank you for your service today, because I want everybody to know that James's phone shattered today.
Ugh.
So it's equivalent to like a pulled hammy, but he's gonna suit up and he's gonna play anyways, because he realized that his phone being shattered is still better than the backup phone that he has. Similar to some of these college programs where, you know, you have a player playing with a bum shoulder and, you know, he's still better than the backup with broken wrist.
There's no way I'm getting taken out.
No way, coach. I'll get it fixed after the season. And that's what James is dealing with right now. So the phone shattered, very similar to like a hairline fracture, but he's not getting fixed until after the season's over. So thank you for your service, James. I'm glad you can make it and join us today.
Me too. And I will say that my phone is just as shattered as my national championship pick was in North Carolina. So let's address the field, Ben. I will take bracket one. We've got Florida State with the college coach of the year, Mike Martin.
You can't even say that with a straight face. It is a joke that they announced that he was coach of the year. It is a lifetime achievement award that was given out. He is not the coach of the year. He coached a good team to a good season so far. I guess it exceeded expectations in a way, but there are probably a dozen coaches in the country that deserve that more than Mike Martin. Because I'll tell you one thing, and I'm probably going to get, I don't even know the right word.
Dude, we didn't start this podcast to make friends. Like, that was when you came to me with this idea, it was not to make friends. We did this to give a player's perspective, to give an unbiased perspective, and just say it like we see it from the things that we've seen. And if you really care about the things we've seen, then maybe you'll listen. That's what we started it.
All right, so. I'm going to say it. Mike Martin doesn't even coach that team. He's a figurehead. He hasn't hit one fungo all year. He hasn't thrown one single pitch in batting practice. All he does is yell at the players when they suck and congratulate the players when they do good. He is a figurehead. He takes away the media from the players. He doesn't coach that team.
Dude, we've talked about this off air.
He mentors that team. He doesn't coach it. How are you going to give him coach of the year?
I agree. And we've talked about this off air with the bigger programs and maybe some of the more experienced coaches that are like CEOs.
Yeah.
They're very much like CEOs.
Do you think Mike Martin stayed after practice to help kids? And he might have. But do you think, like, without any prior knowledge, do you think if a kid said, hey, Coach Martin, Martin Sr., can you stay after and, like, toss me some balls in the cage? He's going to be like, no.
Like, that's what I pay two other guys to do.
That's what I pay my son to do. I pay him to coach third base and wear my name on the back of his jersey.
But we're excited for him. Definitely think it was a lifetime achievement award. Whatever. I wasn't going to win it, so I'm not upset, you know, personally. Right. It's just part of politics and sports, man. It doesn't go away. Arkansas, Michigan, Texas Tech. That rounds out bracket one, bracket A. Call it what you want.
Wait, we should explain how the bracket works just real fast so that there's no confusion.
Well, if I can name the other bracket, then I think we can do it. Okay. Vanderbilt, Louisville, Mississippi State, Auburn. Boom, there you go.
All right, so the way that this tournament works is there's two separate sides of the bracket, four teams on each bracket. It is double elimination for until it gets to championship play. So until you advance out of your bracket, it is double elimination, straight up. So you have two teams play. And then the winner of that plays the winner of the other two teams while the losers play against each other. So it is still crucial to win game one. If you don't win the first game of the tournament, you're fighting your way through the loser's bracket, and that sucks and very hard to do. So key to these tournaments is win game one. And have a lot of depth in the back end of your bullpen because you're going to need those guys because you're playing every other day for four straight days. And another thing with the bracket that I just forgot, James, maybe you can help me out. There's and then once you get to the championship round, it becomes a 2 out of 3. So it's just like a weekend series, except I think it takes place Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But yeah, so that's how it works. So if your team is better suited for a double elimination bracket, somebody like maybe Michigan, I don't know, has a lot of depth on the pitching side. Texas Tech has a lot of depth. They're good for the double elimination. But you have teams like Vanderbilt and Mississippi State who are really built for that best 2 out of 3 like scenario where they have 2 or 3 very, very good pitchers that can throw deep into games. So anyways, what we're going to do first, and we'll preview the show just real fast. I know we've talked about a lot of everything. This show is going to be very clean, very crisp, and very entertaining because we are taking fans that were taking questions submitted into us from fans, and we're going to discuss them. And we got some good ones. We got probably about 50 questions submitted, so we sorted through those. But here's how the show is going to go. We just introduced the 8 teams. There were 4 SEC teams, 2 ACC teams, 1 Big 12, 1 Big 10, 0 Pac-12, which is a very shock, a very big surprise because we had, I think, 3 of those teams in the top 15 like all season. But what we're going to do next is we're going to rank the teams in the tournament 1 through 8. So we're going to like reseed the teams and just tell you guys who we think is the best to the worst. And that's going to lead us to our potential championship matchups where we're going to pick who we think is going to make it to the national championship game, the best 2 out of 3, and who's going to win. We're also going to talk about key players, 1 key player for each team that we think that has to perform in order for them to win the whole thing. We're going to predict our College World Series MVPs, first to exit. We're going to talk about umpires. We're going to talk about experience, a whole lot of stuff on this show, but it's going to be very clean, very formatted, and very entertaining to listen to. So, James, let's do what our fans suggested we do and rank the teams 1 through 8 first. And
I will let you go first, my friend.
All righty. Good. So the way that I'm going to rank the teams is on, I guess, who's hot right now. Like, who's playing the best baseball right now? So it's not what happened. You know, these rankings have nothing to do prior to conference tournament play, let's say. So coming at number 8, I'm going to say the Michigan Wolverines. I think Michigan is a good team, but they ran into a team they matched up well against with UCLA in the Super Regional, and they didn't have to deal with Oregon State at all. So I think they're the worst of the 8, and I think many people would agree with that. Coming in at number 2, or sorry, not number 2. Coming in
second
at
second worst
is the Auburn Tigers. I think if they had a 100% healthy Tanner Burns, they would be higher up on the list. But again, I think they've kind of gotten put in a good situation facing 2 ACC teams in the regional, super regional. They didn't play well in their conference tournament. So I think Auburn's very beatable, but the bats are hitting better than they've hit all year. And we'll dive into that later. Coming in at number 6, I'm going to say, and this might be a little surprise to some people. Oh, you just moved your camera and freaked me out. Sorry.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to see your face.
Oh, nice. That's nice of you. Sorry, where did I leave off? Number 6. Number 6, I'm going to go with Florida State. I think that they are really good. Obviously, they made it this far. But we've seen them be a roller coaster all year. I think the roller coaster is going to be on its way down this week. You know, congrats of them getting there. But if you look at the numbers and the pitching staff and the players on the field, they have what it takes to get there, but now that they're facing, you know, elite arms, the big boys, I think they're going to get kind of humbled in a little bit. Coming in at number 8, 7, 6, 5. Okay. I'm going to say number 5 is Arkansas. And I know there's going to be a lot of people mad at me because there's a lot of Arkansas fans on the show, but you guys want my honest opinion, I'll tell you why. I think besides Isaiah Campbell, there's really nobody else that scares me in that starting rotation. And then you got guys like Cronin and Kostyshyk out of the bullpen, but they can only throw so many innings. So winning game one is crucial. I think that they beat Florida State game one. But I don't know. I don't think it'll be enough to go deep into the tournament. Number four, I have I'm writing this down as we go because I didn't take the time to actually write it down before. I don't want to get lost. Number four.
I could be lost.
Yeah. Number four, I'm going with Vanderbilt. And that's going to be a surprise to some people.
Ooh, boy.
But I think Vanderbilt's playing the worst baseball they've played all year. And it's just I don't feel the Vanderbilt magic this year as I felt in the past. This is the first time they've made it since, I think, 2014. Is that right?
Yeah.
2015, maybe? They haven't made it, like, the last 3 years. And
let me get a clarification on this, but continue.
Yeah. So I think that they're – I mean, I think they're going to win at least one game, but the longer they go in the tournament, I think their chances run out rather quickly. Number three, I'm going to go with – who am I forgetting? Oh, Louisville. I was really down on Louisville until last week when I saw them beat up on East Carolina. Louisville, when they put everything together, I think they're the best team in the nation. But we've seen them struggle on the offensive side of the ball. But there was no problem with that with Louisville. I think they last week in the Super Regionals. The interesting thing with Louisville this year or this week is they're coming off one of the most dominating Super Regional performances we've ever seen. I think they only gave up like 4 runs and scored like 22. So, and against a really good East Carolina team. That's going to play a long ways, and they get their closer back. Big, big time news for them. Number two, I'm going to go with Texas Tech. People have been sleeping on Texas Tech, including ourselves, all year. They just a very composed team, very consistent. Nothing gets too big in their head. I tweeted a picture of my screenshot out from a text that I had with a certain friend. And when they went down, and I said, don't worry, they are stone cold killers. They don't care what the score is. They're going to play their style of baseball. They will come back and at least tie it. And they won against Oklahoma State, which was a big win for them. I think it was their fourth appearance in Omaha since like 2011 or 2012, something crazy like that. I think they're going to make it to the championship round. And then the best team playing the best baseball right now is Mississippi State. I think Mississippi State has been tested all year. And if the injuries hold out, like they don't get anybody else injured, because we've seen JT Ginn get injured this year. We've seen Elijah McNamee injured this year. If those injuries don't play a factor, I think it's their tournament to lose. They just have that kind of special mix of senior leadership. Coach Lemonis is one of the best we've ever seen. They're going to have a ton of people there at the field.
Yep.
Mississippi State just kind of feels like they have magic, but I'm not saying they're going to win it all. I just think if I had to re-rank the teams, that's the way I would re-rank them.
All right.
James, your turn.
Yeah, I had a very exciting point that I wanted to talk about, and I lost it because I didn't want to interrupt you. But if it's actually important, it'll come back to me later. It was something around the Vanderbilt point. But I'm going to go ahead and rank the teams from 1 to 8, actually. I'm going to go ahead and take the reverse side of things. I'm going to say that my number one team in this tournament, the Louisville Cardinals.
Hey, I like that. That's my national championship pick from day one.
Number one. They're my number one pick. I think they're the number one seed. They're my favorites to win the tournament. Number two, I've got Vanderbilt. Star power. They are becoming the Yankees of college baseball, aside from their god-awful uniforms. Just totally god-awful. They have the most drafted players. They have the most players that were drafted from last week on the roster. And for many people, they should be the favorites. I've seen them play extensively. I've seen Louisville play extensively. I'm going with Louisville, but Vanderbilt's number two.
Isn't it funny that those two teams are matching up? Your two best teams?
Yo, that's exactly right. And that's we're going to talk about that, kind of just how we see this tournament unfolding. But those are one and two. Number three, Mississippi State, in my opinion. I think that Ethan Small is the ultimate difference maker. I'm trying not to give away like key players or anything or key analysis. But between just their overall offensive prowess and having one of the most dominant pitchers we've seen in college baseball history. I've got Mississippi State number three. Number four, I'm going to go with Texas Tech. Number five, I have Arkansas. Number six, I am going to go with Florida State. Seven, Michigan. Eight, Auburn. Those are my power rankings, 1 through 8. Again, Louisville, 1, Vanderbilt, 2, Mississippi State, 3, Texas Tech, 4, Arkansas, 5, Florida State, 6, Michigan, 7, and Auburn, 8. Those are my power rankings.
So it looks like we agree pretty much on who the top four are and who the bottom four are. Mm-hmm. There's a couple distinguished points between the two, but what's going to make this tournament so fun is it's not going to shape out the way we plan it to shape out. Like, there's never a year where it's the better team wins every single game. In fact,
I just remembered. Let me hit my point.
Yeah.
I saw on Twitter, I'm sure you saw it too, that this is like since 1999, 20 years in a row, that the number one team in the country is not going to win the College World Series, right? And so people are like, oh, aren't we lucky that, like, if I'm a Vanderbilt fan, that Vanderbilt's not number one because we're not going to win. That's not what that means. What it means is it's very difficult to actually tell who the best team is. That's what it means.
That's a good spin zone.
It's exactly what it means. It's really hard to figure out who the number one team is. For a while, we thought Oregon State was really good. We had Arizona State really high. UCLA obviously was consensus number one everywhere. We just don't know who the best team is.
And the best team for the first 4 months of the year means nothing. It's like, who's the best team right now?
If there was
injuries involved, like, that's why I think Auburn got into the tournament and people kind of forgot about them. Like, they were a top 15 team in our ranking for a while. And then they started getting some injuries. People weren't performing
up to standards.
Up to standards. And we literally forgot about them. They were under 500 in conference. And then it came down to them in the conference tournament, and then you can kind of catch a little scene of them playing better baseball, and then they get matched up in Atlanta for the Georgia Tech regional and went on a walk-off 3-run homer, and from there it was
you beat them and you're in the driver's seat,
right?
So that's just an interesting tidbit, man. Like, it's just hard for sports writers and anyone to figure out who the best team is, and that's the evidence is that the number one overall seed hasn't won in 20 years.
Right.
It's not that whoever's number one is a bad ranking. It's just like, oh, maybe they're number five, maybe they're number four, So it's going to be wild. Like, that's just to go off your point. Like, take your rankings, take what you think you know, take
the analysis. Throw it out the window.
Yeah. Just strap yourselves in, turn on the tube, drink responsibly, and watch the damn games, because it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun for about 2 weeks, man.
The one scary point that I was thinking about for, like, who the best team is a lot of these teams are really good on their home field or, like, really good, like, in conference.
Dude, you're so right.
That doesn't matter anymore. Like, you're facing teams that you've never seen before, I guess, instead of, like, Mississippi State and Auburn. But there's not a lot of neutral site, like, statistics out there. And so this isn't a true road game for any of them, because they're not facing fans screaming what their girlfriend's, Instagram photos look like.
Right.
It's neutral site, but there will be fans for both teams. The biggest difference is just adjusting to the ballpark. And we'll touch on it briefly. TD Ameritrade is known as a graveyard. It is a huge field. So home runs don't play a huge factor in it, but doubles and triples, they play a big factor. And if you look at it on paper, the teams that hit the most doubles and triples are Mississippi State, Louisville, Vandy, Texas Tech. Like, those guys hit a lot of just line drive gappers, not the huge power that we're used to seeing from teams like Coastal Carolina and
an Oklahoma State team.
Those type of teams. So that's going to play a big factor in why we ranked these teams 1 to 8.
And I wanted to also hit on, you mentioned, like, it's a neutral site game, and I feel like a lot of big programs, a lot of time is spent trying to make their players feel comfortable. We'll schedule soft teams at home early in the year, pay for them to come down, get some wins. Like, these kids, a lot of these schools have played 40 home games this year. They got to hear their walk-up songs over and over and over again on the weekends. Like, it really set themselves up to be successful. And then, you know, they go and they play on the road in these tough conferences in the SEC and the ACC. You're just trying to survive when you play those road games, right? But so that's a challenge in and of itself, because you're getting a taste of your own medicine, and so to speak. But now they have to deal with a whole different type of challenge, in the sense that, like, this whole week is a circus, right? Like, it's
right.
There's media events. You're at a new place. It's literally the Super Bowl of college baseball, and you can't ignore that. Maybe if you're Michigan, you can feel like you're playing with house money after you just beat the number one team in the land, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're kind of like on cloud nine, and they definitely believe in themselves. But for teams that do have expectations, there are different challenges, and they're psychological. We talked about before the show, what you don't want to have happen is feel like you're in the game when you're not playing the game. Like,
yeah, you want everything to slow down outside of the game.
Yeah. You do not want to be showing up to your hotel and trying to get things planned for breakfast and travel and interviews and have everything feel like it's moving a million miles a second, because whenever you get ready for the game, it's already going to move a million miles a second. Like, the madness is going to come, and you just don't want that coming when it's not necessary. So there's just different challenges, man. Like, it's totally different compared to anything they've had to deal with all season long.
Good. And I'm glad you brought up that point, because it comes for our first question of the day. How much does experience play a factor with these teams? I think you did a good job explaining the circus part. You know, there's way more going on outside of the field than going on inside of the field. And yep. So the players that have been there before, you know, that plays a little factor. But my point, and I think you'll agree with me on this, it doesn't really matter as much for player experience, because every year is going to be something new, something different. They're not playing the same teams. You know, they're not playing with the same schedule. They're not even playing with the same team teammates. Like, every year it changes. So, like, if they've been in the College World Series.
And honestly, unless you're like one of those old TCU teams and you've been to Omaha and started like 16 games in the tournament for 3 years, like, you were only there once before, most likely.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's still relatively new, and you're still at the oldest, 22 or 23. Like, you know, they're still going to be nervous. So I'm right with you.
And so my point is, and I think you're going to agree with me on this, the experience from the coaching staff is the biggest factor that plays a part in this, because a coach that has been there 4 or 5 times knows exactly like how to prepare. He knows exactly where to go, when to go, why to go, how to get his team prepared with interviews. You know, you can say this, you know, be yourself, don't be yourself in this situation. And they know like the little things. They know like where in Omaha you can go and just kind of hide out and like relax and not be surrounded by a bunch of, you know, screaming 12-year-olds trying to get your autograph. And they know when to get their team out of the hotel and get a little workout in with the Planet Fitness down the road. There's a lot of intangibles that a coach knows, and the players all look up to the coach. And if the coach is scatterbrained, it's his first time there, he doesn't know where to go, he's overwhelmed with a bunch of different stuff. Like, they're going to get overwhelmed and they're going to take after their leader. But a coach that has been there multiple times, has dealt with the media before, maybe takes the media attention on himself, you know, to take it off their players, like something Tim Tadlock, I think, will do. You know, Tim Tadlock always loves messing with the media. You can hear me, I can't hear you. One of those things. He'll take the stress off his players. But, coaching staff and especially Florida State with Mike Martin, the media is not going to care 1 second about 90% of Florida State's team. They're going to want to talk to Mike Martin. And he's just going to sit back and love every second of it, because he knows.
As he should. Enjoy your last go around.
And he knows his team is not, like, it will not be bothered by anybody. And so that's a scenario where, like, that's going to happen. But, you know, Michigan, like, their players might be overwhelmed. Like, their coach might be overwhelmed. There's a lot of things that are different. So I think player experience doesn't play as big of a factor as coaching staff experience, just for the intangible stuff that goes on outside of the field.
No, I agree. And I think this is when the coaches really get to make their money. How do you prep, your 19 or 20-year-old kid, shoot, an 18-year-old kid who hasn't been here before, isn't prepared? You know, there are some players there are going to be key guys that play key roles in these games that haven't been starting since February, right? They might only have 70, 80 at bats. Like they weren't thinking about this moment in early February. They're just trying to earn their playing time. How those kids are prepared and how they handle the situation, in a large part, will come by the guy who writes their name on the lineup card and how he approaches them. You know, because these players, they don't interact with the coaches as much as you would think. They're very surface level interactions. Like, hey, bud, how you doing? Like, hey, coach, I'm doing well. Like, it is not common for players to spend like an hour just talking to their coaches. Like, there's just not a lot of time. You've got 35 of them. How well can you really get to know them? So what I'm really trying to tie together.
I mean, it's kind of like having your middle managers in a business. Like, how often do they actually talk to the CEO? I don't know, maybe an hour or two a week. Like, right. It's not like they're on the phone with each other outside of business hours. It's like, let's just do our own thing, and when we see each other, we'll talk and like we'll be cool with each other, or we won't be cool with each other. There's a lot of players out there that don't get along with their coaches. But no, I think these eight coaches do a good job of, you know, making sure everybody gets along.
Right. But, and my just to wrap the whole segment up is like you make a good analogy with the, you know, the assistant coaches being kind of like the managers, like middle managers, and then the head coach being the CEO. Like, the assistant coaches are spending a lot of times with these kids and a lot of times did the recruiting for these kids, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got good relationships. But when you spend a lot of time with someone like that, it kind of devalues, in essence, their communication. I mean, all of us who, like, I know for a fact, our dads were involved with us coaching us in baseball a little bit, mm-hmm. and it made us not want to listen to them because we talk all the time to them. So, right? Like, it's just kind of like, how good is the stuff you have to say? You say it all the time. But when your head coach, who has surface level interactions with you, maybe he pulls you aside and just for like 7 seconds gives you a like one sentence, one way of saying something about the atmosphere that maybe calms you down, that's huge, man. So like, this is when these coaches really get to make their money and calm these kids down.
That
might have
been
down.
The best point we've ever made on that show. James, congrats to you. That was good. I like
I'm
that.
I'm sorry, man. I'm fired up about it because I've seen it. Like, I've seen it.
When your assistant coach tells you something over and over again every single day and you interact with them, you talk with them on the bus, whenever you guys go out to eat, like it waters down the whole, the whole tangible side of your brain. You know, he tells you something, you've heard it 100 times, it doesn't mean anything. But when your 75-year-old coach looks at you and says, like, you know, it's just a bunt, man. Like, you've done this before, like, get it down. Like, I don't care how you do it. I don't care how we practice it. I don't know how we practice it. I'm not there during bunt practice. Just get it down. Like, it's 91 at the letters. Like, get it down. You know, it kind of just reminisces with you. And you're like, you know what? Yeah, like, I'm not going to let this old man down. I'm not letting this 75-year-old dude down. Like, I don't want him to hate me. I know my assistant coach won't ever hate me because I talk to him every day. But that's a good point. Don't make the CEO mad. The CEO, you don't get to talk to. But whenever he does talk to you, it means something.
Yeah.
You tell your friends and family, like, hey, I talked with the CEO. I talked with, you know, Bill Gates today. That was pretty cool. It's like, oh, yeah, what did he tell you? Oh, nothing. Like, nothing important. He's just a cool dude. He's a chill guy.
100%. So those are just some tidbits I think you can look out for from the perspective of a couple washed-up baseball players.
Washed up.
Ben, do you want to go ahead and talk about the individual brackets and how we see things going down, or how do you want to move on?
So we're going to combine two questions we've gotten from numerous people. And so I'm going to break down each game. So there's, what is it, four games? Four games?
You know what, man? I'm glad we went to college because you're
there's
damn
There's four games, eight teams, and we're going to give one player for each team that's going to be the most important for that game and how to help their team win. So like a player to watch.
Kind of an X-Factor type deal.
X-Factor, and also who we think is going to win each game. So let's start at the top. Let's start with Michigan versus Texas Tech. Michigan comes in with three starting pitchers that are all pretty solid. Like, they've all had really good seasons at points and really bad seasons at points. Personally, I think they should start Tommy Henry, who was their absolute, like, stud. No way anybody else is getting the ball. But then I think I heard he battled through some dead arm in the middle of the year. And his earned runs started going way up, like giving up 5 or 6 a game. And so Tommy Henry is a lefty pitcher that I think deserves the ball game one against Texas Tech, because Texas Tech is something like 32-8 against right-handed pitching and 11-6 against left-handed pitching. So the numbers say if you have a stud who's been pitching lights out, as Tommy Henry has lately in the beginning of the season, throw him out there. He's going to be your best draft guy and best pro prospect. Let's see if the numbers stay true where Texas Tech doesn't hit lefties as well as righties. And if he doesn't have it, then it's okay because you can maybe have one of your other two starting pitchers, like stud right-handed starting pitchers, kind of sitting in the bullpen waiting. You know, if it's a tough first or second inning, you can just flip them out real quick.
Yeah, if there's a team that can piece it together, it's definitely Michigan.
So, yeah, so Tommy Henry is my X factor for Michigan. And then for Texas Tech, I think I got to go with Gabe Holt. I know everybody's thinking Josh Jung, however you pronounce his last name, J-U-N-G, you be the judge. But Gabe Holt has got to be the X factor because he's their on-base machine. He's got 28 stolen bases and 30
attempts. I think he makes them go. I think it's
them go. Yeah, 100%. He's a speedster, but he's also a good defender. He hits the ball in the gaps. If he gets them started early in the first, especially maybe gets his leadoff single and then goes first move off Tommy Henry and gets to second, it's like, uh-oh, engine's churning. Like, here we go. Like, now you got to face the big boys. Cam Warren is one of my favorite players in college baseball. He's just a big, lovable dude.
They're only senior, my man. They're only senior.
And Josh Jung was 8th overall pick. We saw him hit a big homer in the Super Regionals. They just have a bunch of, and I've said it 100 times, but I want to reemphasize how much that Texas Tech is just like cold-blooded killers, man. They're one of those guys that nobody's talked about all year. They've taken care of business for the most part. They have a very lovable coach with Tim Tadlock. They will never get down on themselves. You won't see their emotions raised too high or too low. They are very consistent, which is a very scary thing for bracket one because they have
You know what it is?
What is it?
I haven't said this on the show. I don't think you have either. They are a blue-collar baseball team.
For sure, 100%. They just got a bunch of big bodies, too. Just a lot of big bodies that like to get down to the nitty-gritty and just grind it out. I mean, they play in Lubbock, Texas, for God's sake. That is might have been the worst place in America outside of the college campus. It's hot. It's windy. It gets freezing cold in the winter. And they did an unbelievable job recruiting kids there. And I think the only challenge for them is their starting pitching. Their starting pitching has given up some runs at times this year. But their bullpen, if you look at their team ERAs, the top six or seven guys in ERA on their team are bullpen guys. Only problem is they're like one or two inning bullpen guys. They're not extended guys. So Texas Tech has got to have a lead. This is a fun fact for you. 32-0 when leading after seven, I believe, and 43-0 when leading after eight, something like that. So, James, the Texas Tech Red Raiders have the lights out bullpen. But the problem is going to be, can you give that bullpen a lead late in the game? Because they have the bats. They have the bullpen. Starting pitching is the biggest question mark. So who is your sorry, I've kind of taken the train away from you.
What train?
Who's your X factor for Michigan and for Texas Tech, and who's your winner?
You know, I kind of have a different take on this segment. I ain't going to lie to you. I kind of have some deep personal insights I want to share about how things can go wrong for certain teams. Because they're kind of one and the same, and I want to like kind of save it all together for the end. I want to do it at the end, and I want you to come in and give me your thoughts about it because I haven't shared any of this with you, so I think it's going to be fun for everyone.
Okay. Wait, so you want to see – so you're going to go game by game how it could go wrong?
I'm going to pick a couple of teams that I think have big – that I think have weak points – and dangerous aspects that haven't really been highlighted.
Okay.
And then we give some insight.
Can you at least give us some insight on who your pick is to win Michigan and Texas Tech? I'm rolling with Texas Tech.
This one is super, super tough. I think Texas Tech is in the position to where they really have to win this game against Michigan. Like I think winning this game against Michigan is going to end up hurting them against Arkansas, if that makes sense. Right, like, I think they're going to have to use bullets and just kind of have, like, win the battle but lose the war because they're playing Michigan and not Florida State. I'm going to go with Texas Tech, but I'm not confident about it, even though
I'm not confident in any of these games. So
yeah, I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I'm picturing like a 4-2 game.
I'll be honest with you. If anybody in this left side of the bracket between Michigan, Texas Tech, Arkansas, and Florida State has like the front end arms to be put in a position, like put in the driver's seat of winning the first two games, it's Michigan, hands down.
Like amen. The
front end of their starting rotation, with they have three guys that are all really good, and then they have two or three bullpen guys that are just electric. They strike a lot of guys out. That's a recipe for winning the first two games. After that, I don't know. They might not make. They might lose two in a row to somebody and have them advance to the championship round. But Michigan is going to be a very interesting team because, I mean, shoot, they just took down the number one team in the nation, UCLA. So, and they can beat anybody in the nation. But I'm rolling with Texas Tech. Moving on to the second game, it's between Arkansas and Florida State. I think Van Eyck is going to pitch for Florida State game one, even though there's some people that would argue Drew Parrish should be starting because he's kind of got the he's a fly ball pitcher, and it plays in that ballpark. And he's kind of got the experience, and he's an innings eater. But I would rather have my innings eater throw game two so you can really just dive the bullpen in game one, try to win that first game. Problem is they're going to be running into arguably the best pitcher in college baseball with Isaiah Campbell. His numbers are stupid. If you don't believe us, you know, give the Arkansas baseball website, you know, a couple link clicks, boost the ratings up a little bit because you need to check out those stats. Isaiah Campbell, very, very good, has been good all year. I think Arkansas, obviously their key factor is going to be Isaiah Campbell. You know, is he going to show up and pitch? If he does, good chances of winning. But I'm going to take a different approach. You know, Dominic Fletcher has been in this position before. Dominic Fletcher kind of is the same as Gabe Holt in the fact that, like, when he's going, I feel like the rest of the team is loosey-goosey. They are, you know, he's the steam engine. So when he goes, the whole train goes. Dominic Fletcher is my X factor. If he goes 3-for-4 with a couple doubles, I don't see Arkansas losing this game at all. And on the flip side, Florida State has got to get out to an early lead because that's what they did. They did not do against LSU. And the difference between LSU and Arkansas is that Arkansas has got back into the guys who I think are better with Kostyshyk and Cronin. They're not going to give up the three or four run lead like LSU did against Florida State. So I'm taking Arkansas. I think this is my second favorite matchup, my second lock besides one more we'll talk about later. So what are your thoughts on this game?
No, I totally agree. I think Isaiah Campbell is going to go out and have a really good game against Florida State. I think Florida State's going to get down early. I think the first inning for Arkansas is going to be big. I've touched on the importance of the first inning before with the Vanderbilt bats. I think the top of the order for Arkansas is the same principle applies. The first inning is going to be huge.
I mean, we saw it against Ole Miss with Arkansas first inning against Isaiah Campbell. Well, not against, but with Isaiah Campbell on the mound. They actually were down 1-0, I believe, like Isaiah Campbell gave up a run in the first to Ole Miss, and then they came back with like a 4 or 5 spot bottom of the first. So
yeah,
that helps their case out a lot. So they keep going. Sorry.
No, I completely agree. I'm going to roll with Arkansas. I'm really excited to see these two schools play. Like these names are just so, so much fun.
So appealing. So much just nostalgia. Just very, very classic names in the game of college baseball.
Amen.
The real story, I mean, obviously goes with Mike Martin. How is he going to react? He's been here before, I think, 17 times. So
unreal.
He'll have his boys ready. It'd be good to see him win a national championship. I think there would be very few people inside the game of college baseball who would not want that to happen, you know, besides their own team. So I'm picking Arkansas, obviously, but Florida State, you never know. They're kind of hot right now, if nobody's noticed. I don't know if they've lost a postseason game yet. Maybe one. I think they've lost one postseason game in the ACC tournament, but they didn't even advance out of their pool. So they went 1-1 in ACC tournament.
Yeah.
But haven't lost in regionals or super regionals yet. So moving on to the right side of the bracket, these four teams are Vanderbilt, Louisville, Mississippi State, and Auburn. Auburn, we both ranked, I think, as the eighth worst or the eighth best team, the worst team here, but we're not too sure, I would say, because
I'm pretty sure. I think I think they're...
On paper, they're the worst, but yeah. As far as, like, playing on the field in the last 6 or 7 games, I don't know. They look pretty scary. Like, the scary part is, and I know we don't value batting average as much as most fans do, but their batting averages are bad. Like, 1 through 9, like, their best, like, 3 and 4 hole hitters are both hitting, like, 240.
No, you make a good point. It's hard to win if you're not getting hits. Right. I do think that if they want to hang around at all in this tournament, they need to win this first game. Because playing the loser of Louisville and Vanderbilt in game two, you're done for. So they have to win this game.
They have to. So we'll start with that game. We'll start with Mississippi State and Auburn. This is, I think both of ours are just like locks of the first four games. I mean, Mississippi State's going to be rolling out Ethan Small, national pitcher of the year, best stuff
question
that we've seen. Yeah.
Do you roll the dice and save him for a Vanderbilt-Louisville matchup?
No way. 0%. No way. It's SEC versus SEC. At the very least, you can go out and say, hey, we beat an SEC team game one. Even if Vanderbilt and, you know, Louisville, if you don't think your number two matches up better than their number two, like, you're not going to win the tournament. And you got to win game one to win this tournament, in my opinion, because battling through that loser's bracket, especially on the right side with Vanderbilt and Louisville, like, if they lose game one and they have to, you know, they throw Ethan Small against Louisville or Vanderbilt, whoever loses that first game, like, all right, now you're back to even with, you don't have any pitching left. You have one starter left. So, yeah. And that one starter is JT Ginn, who might be hurt still. So, X factor to me has to be JT Ginn, because he's probably pitching game three this week, I would assume. I think Plumlee's earned the right to start game two. The JT Ginn's come off an injury, but how great would it be if somehow we got a Kumar Rocker versus JT Ginn, freshman versus freshman game? Dude, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. The only way I could see it happening is if it is... No, I don't think
hold
I could
on
see
a
it
second.
Let's not
go that far, because that matchup would be so beneficial for the sport. Here are two freshmen who combined turned down tens of millions of dollars to come to this stage to pitch for these programs and to let it all hang out to compete, like, in this environment. Oh my God, you know how good that would be for the sport? Like,
it would be amazing for the sport, but there's two questions. Is JT Ginn healthy? Yes or no? And I don't know the answer. You don't know the answer.
Only people in the country know the answer to that
question. Right. I think he's fine. I think he's good to go, but that's not my call. Second question is, Vanderbilt has to throw Kumar Rocker game one, don't they?
Well, like, yeah, we've talked about it before. I mean, I don't think Drake.
I mean, he's been pitching game two or three on the weekends every single weekend. Has not started a Friday night, but Fellows, I don't know if we'll get the job done. We'll talk more about that when we talk about that game. But Kumar Rocker, in my opinion, has to throw game one, and if that's the case, I don't think that he's throwing twice before the championship matchup. So let's hope and pray we get a JT Ginn versus Kumar Rocker freshman versus freshman matchup in there, but. I don't think it's going to happen. Personally, I don't think it's going to happen. But
yep.
Anyways, the only way I can see it happening is if JT Ginn throws game two and Kumar Rocker throws game two and they both either win or lose game one, their respective teams. But going back to my X factor, JT Ginn for Mississippi State is my X factor, because if he's healthy, I think they get through that side of the bracket. And if he's not healthy, I think there's no way he gets through that Mississippi State wins that side of the bracket. I'll leave it pretty simple for you guys. And obviously there's a chance that the opposite of those things could happen, but from my educated guess, my hypothesis, the variable is JT Ginn. When they have variable, they do better than when they don't have variable.
Variable is big.
Yeah, prove me wrong. And then on the other side of the ball, Auburn, I think I saw where Jack Owens is pitching game one, not Tanner Burns. Tanner Burns looked pretty dang good against UNC the first two innings before they, you know, were forced to remove him to, you know, give that game some excitement. You know, 13-0 in the first inning, that's pretty tough. But
yeah, go away.
Tanner Burns might not be fully healthy, might be saving him game two. This is a matchup, though, that not a lot of people remember this, but Auburn did beat Mississippi State on Friday night against Ethan Small it wasn't Small's fault. It was the Mississippi State bullpen's fault. But that's got to be in the back of the minds of a lot of Mississippi State players and coaching staff. Like, this game is not over. I know we have the better team, but they've beaten us before in the same scenario. So we have to take this game seriously. And that's why I guarantee you they will start Ethan Small.
Yeah. You know what, Ben? You make a good point.
Anyways, so what are your thoughts on this game? Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. What are your thoughts? I already talked about Auburn.
I think that if Ethan Small pitches and he pitches the way he's capable of, it's pretty much money in the bank for Mississippi State compared to any other game you could see in this tournament. Mm-hmm. I'm not recommending you go put some money on it because we just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, this could be another low-scoring game, honestly. I could see this one being 4-3. But I will take Mississippi State as well.
Okay. And then the last matchup, our favorite matchup, Vanderbilt versus Louisville. I've been on Louisville since day one, except for one day when I said I think Texas Tech will win it. But I'm back on the Louisville train. That is my national championship pick. I have the bracket to prove it. I have the episode one podcast where we predicted our national champions to prove it. It would be really cool to see Louisville win it all. I don't know if they will, because we've seen two totally ends of the spectrum of them this season. When they're hitting well, they win games. When they don't hit well, they don't win games. So I will tell you this. They will be starting Reed Detmers game one, who is the ACC Pitcher of the Year. And I suspect that Vanderbilt will be opposing with the all-star of last week, Kumar Rocker, who threw a no-hitter, 17 strikeouts, or maybe 19 strikeouts.
19.
19 strikeouts. I knew it was a prime number. but, golly, I'm excited for this matchup. The two pitchers, honestly, Vanderbilt's got a few more that could compete up there on the mound. Louisville, their key will, what's his first name? Is it Logan Wyatt? Is that the name?
Yep, that's his first name.
Logan Wyatt. I almost blanked on his name. It's pretty late over here right now. If Logan Wyatt gets good pitches, he's the type of hitter that I think can hit Kumar Rocker because he's a low ball guy, and Kumar Rocker, everything is low, 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 even his curveball in the dirt. Yep. And he's got a very patient approach. So it shows that his eye is better than average. He will probably not swing at curveballs in the dirt. So Kumar Rocker is going to have to challenge him with fastballs, and Kumar Rocker is not scared to challenge him with fastballs. And that's why Logan Wyatt's numbers are down this year, is because teams are scared to throw him fastballs. And I think I can see a big day from Logan Wyatt. Vanderbilt, I think, is playing bad baseball right now in their eyes. I think they know it. So there's two things that's going to happen. Either they are going to continue to play bad baseball, or they are going to realize it and wake up and play excellent baseball the rest of the way and win it all. This is Vanderbilt's tournament to lose. Everybody knows that. They come in heavy favorites. They are the blue blood of college baseball, kind of like the New York Yankees. They can get anybody they want, you know, because there's some speculation on some scholarship stuff. We're not diving into that today. But they are like the Yankees because they can get whoever they want, and they usually do get whoever they want. Coaching staff has been here in this position before multiple times, including a national championship in 2014. They're not going to be overwhelmed by this situation. But on the other hand, Louisville has Dan McDonald, who will also not be overwhelmed. I would go to war for that guy.
He's never been overwhelmed by anything in his whole life.
And his wife. Yeah, in his whole life. Except for maybe the umpire situation in the regionals. But I think this will be – I mean, if you're not a college baseball fan and you're just listening to this to, you know, kind of get up to date before the games start on Friday or Saturday, this is the game I would recommend you sitting down and watching from start to finish, because this is – I can just see it now. Just a lot of just back and forth baseball, loud fans. I believe it's game one of the day. I think it's the 2 o'clock game.
It is game one of the tournament, and I told you before the show.
Of the tournament? Are you sure?
Yeah, it's game one.
This is a Saturday game?
Yep, Saturday, 2 p.m.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that. I thought it was on Sunday. Oh, no. Nope. Saturday at 2 p.m., sign me up.
Saturday at 2 p.m., the winner of this game is in the driver's seat to win the whole tournament. So here's my analysis on this side of the bracket. I think if Vanderbilt loses this game, they will not come out of the bracket. I think that if Louisville loses the game,
it would be kind of a surprise to see them lose the first game and then come out of the bracket, right?
Right, but what I'm saying is I think that Louisville has a better chance of the two teams to come back after losing this game, to come back and beat the same team twice. Because what I think is going to happen is the winner of this game is going to win the bracket, is the favorite to win the bracket. So what could happen is Louisville could lose, and what that would mean, in my opinion, I think Vanderbilt would win game two and be in the magical 2-0 spot. I think Louisville has the depth on the mound. Not only the depth, but I guess quality is inside of depth. They have the depth on the mound to come back and have to beat Vanderbilt twice. I don't think Vanderbilt has that depth to come back and beat Louisville twice. Now, that's at the conclusion of the bracket. So this, the number one game, the first game, in my opinion, sets up who's the favorite to win the whole enchilada. So
okay. No, that's I like that. So what you're saying, Louisville's winning this bracket no matter what. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that if between Louisville and Vanderbilt, Louisville has the better chance of losing this game and coming back or winning the bracket. I think if Vanderbilt's going to win their bracket, they need to win game one. I could see Louisville losing it and coming all the way back. I don't see that with Vanderbilt.
All right. Yeah. So I like it. So let's do our potential national championship matchups. I have Texas Tech. Ooh, I don't want to say beating Louisville, but I guess I have to have Louisville winning it all because they've been my pick since day one.
Yep.
Can I say my brain says pick Louisville, but my heart says pick Texas Tech?
Dude, you always go with your heart. Don't stop now.
I think. Louisville wins it all. That's my pick. You can audio clip this. Louisville wins it all. They beat Texas Tech in three games. A lot of red and black in the stands. It'll be fun. That's my pick. What's yours? You know what?
That's my pick too. And you know, I think what we have come to the conclusion is we have picked the two most complete teams in the tournament. Most complete teams in the tournament.
All right, James, we have to do our MVP picks for the College World Series because it is a fan question. I'm rolling, since we have to pick the winner or the MVP of the winning team, I'm going with Reed Detmers. I think he throws an awesome game one of the double elimination bracket and an awesome game one of the best of three championship series. Reed Detmers is my pick. I'm expecting 2-0, maybe 15 or 16 innings pitched. And
a billion strikeouts.
Maybe like one strike or maybe like one run given up, something like that. But who's your College World Series MVP?
I'm going to give the fans a position player to look out for. Alex Benellis, freshman infielder, the third baseman for Louisville. The kid's the real deal. He absolutely rakes. He's not scared. I've seen him in big-time situation after big-time situation come up clutch. And I think it's the year of the freshman in college baseball, honestly. It's a new era. Alex Benellis, mark it down, World Series MVP.
That'd be pretty cool. Win the College World Series MVP and get to come back for two more years.
Amen, dude. That's what I think.
Cool. And then, so the next question that we have to take care of before you get into your segment is, would it be good for the sport if Michigan wins the College World Series since they're a northern team? My answer is easy. I think yes, absolutely.
100%.
I mean, it would be good to like get the other half of the country involved in college baseball.
That would make too much sense, Ben.
Yeah, and then you would get guys that maybe want to stay up north. Like if they're from up north, they might want to stay up north and play for a Big Ten team. And maybe we don't have such – and this is probably just bizarre to hear, but maybe we don't have such loaded SEC teams or ACC teams. But I don't know if this just one championship will – inflate the northern school's interest in baseball, but it would be a good little slap in the face of the Big Ten and say maybe invest more in baseball.
Yeah.
So let's see if there's any other. Oh, first to exit the tournament. I think it has to be.
I'm going Auburn. I'm going to say Auburn gets a nice 0-2. Thanks for coming. Nice little boost to the recruiting resume. Good story. Like a nice accomplishment,
It sucks because they're going to be playing against the loser of Vanderbilt and Louisville. That's going to suck. Because they'll probably lose to Ethan Small and Mississippi State, and then get matched up 2 days later with either Vanderbilt or Louisville. And we just talked about how both of those teams match up well in the loser's bracket. So Auburn, I think, is the first team out. And, yeah, so that's pretty much it, James. What was your segment you want to talk about? We'll end on that.
Well, I'm just going to give a couple of tidbits and analysis on how some of these teams are going to go wrong in this tournament. So where if you see them lose and you see them get into trouble, this is why. I'm going to start with Vanderbilt. Just some quick hitting points. Their starters actually get hit hard. A lot of extra base hits. Over 30 extra base hits given up by Drake Fellows. Double-digit home runs. Lots of hard contact. I know it's a big yard, but there's a big potential for them to just get lit up. And if you get in a loser's bracket because your pitching got lit up, I mean, that's the way Vanderbilt's going to go down. Like, they're uber talented, the most draft guys. I already said that, but the numbers are what they are, and they're prone to get lit up. It's very odd. I can't make heads or tails of them. How can you have so much talent but continue to just give up oobles and oobles of extra base hits? So
maybe because they're up by 10 runs every game and they just sort of fastballs down the middle.
Not when it's your starting pitchers doing it. I don't know, man. So anyways, that's what I feel about Vanderbilt. For Mississippi State, here's how Mississippi State can get in trouble. Misusing of their assets, of their bullpen. The guy with the most innings out of the bullpen this year, Jordan Liebelt, right-handed sidearm, low three-quarter guy, unbelievable two-seam. It's honestly major league caliber. Problem, he can't get lefties out, or he doesn't get lefties out. The numbers are there. It's not just because he's right-handed. He really struggles to get them out. He has their most innings out of the pen. If they have to rely on him to get lefties out with runners in scoring position, hold your breath. Literally hold your breath. I'm going to go with another team, Arkansas. If they go wrong, two things. One, Connor Noland, also major trouble there. Gets hit hard. Major ground ball guy. Ground balls are scary in this tournament because you can
roll 400 feet to the wall.
Right, you get the ball 400 feet to the wall. Ground balls are scary because you can hit it in between short and third and get dinky base hits, and you can go first to third on dinky singles where pop-ups are out 98% of the time. So there's very little, unless you're an Arkansas fan. Anyways, but pop-ups are more consistently outs. Ground balls are scary.
Did you just throw a little last year tidbit? Pop-ups are out 98% of the time.
If I didn't say it, someone else was going to, honestly. So Connor Noland is ground ball prone.
That's a bad matchup. If Texas Tech wins game one and Arkansas is Connor Noland, guy. If Connor Noland throws game two against Texas Tech, that's trouble, I think, for Arkansas. Just saying that now.
No, 100%. And the other, I'm not sure if I got cut out for a little bit, but anyways, Connor Noland also is not a punch-out guy, which is not good. You need to have punch-out guys in these games. We've talked about it before. If you have punch-out guys, what it means is it doesn't matter how many people you have out playing defense. The guy struck out. You don't need any defenders.
And that's why Coastal Carolina won the national championship, because you looked at their bullpen and they were warriors that year. They definitely threw way more innings than what the coaches wanted, but they had three guys that I can't remember their name, but every single one of them was a punch out guy, like 1.4 an inning, like 1.6 an inning.
Yeah.
And that's what won them the national championship. Cause anytime runners were in scoring position, they would go sliders down and away, fastballs up and in, and just couldn't come back and hit those pitches. So punch outs play at this ballpark for sure.
100%. I mean, they won the national championship on a strikeout with the winning run in scoring position. So anyways, Connor Noland doesn't punch guys out. Big ground ball guy. That's volatile. Not good. And their top arms out of the bullpen are not multiple inning guys. They can't roll them out there to get 10, 9, 11 outs. They combined.
Well, they could. They just haven't much this year.
Right. They haven't. And to ask it all of a sudden now when they haven't done it all year, it's a way they could lose. That's all I'm saying. It's a way they could lose. Florida State, it's their defense. If you give teams extra outs in these tournaments, it's not going to go well for you. I mean, You give teams get three outs in this league, Ben. You give them four outs, that's like 25% more outs. It's not good. Okay. You give me 25% more outs, I would have played baseball a lot longer. Okay, that's all I'm saying. So that's something the Florida State's gonna have to look out for. It's really little, it's stuff that you won't notice necessarily. It's just an infielder not taking a right angle, outfielders bobbling a ball in the gap, and a double turns into a triple. Defense really plays this time of year, and their defense has been a problem all season long. So those are some tidbits on how teams could lose, some of their weaknesses, some of their strengths, some strengths that they're going to have to overcome on these weaknesses. These are the weaknesses or strengths we'll have to overcome. Say it however you want. That's the way I'm looking at it for those teams.
Right. Well, cool. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up our College World Series edition of the show. You guys feel free to ask us questions. It looks like the plan right now is to go live on Twitter Saturday morning before the first game. You guys can
a little tailgate.
We'll have a fun little segment there so you guys can join us. Not set in stone yet, but that looks like the plan. We will we'll be giving you all the coverage you guys need and want for college baseball. We're here to grow the game. We want this to, you know, ultimately be one of the biggest sports in the world. So you guys just stay with us. You know, we'll have your back. Just have ours. That's all we ask. So thank you guys, and we'll be back Saturday.